Welcome to Manners and Madness, a Jane Austen and David Lynch podcast. My name is Maya Adkins.
And I'm Christian Cabrera, and today is our part one discussion of Lost Highway.
The movie that I believe made me an actual David Lynch fan.
Ooh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about it, and I believe besides it, Twin Peaks, it's the first like David Lynch movie that I watched.
Oh, interesting. So this was your first David Lynch movie?
Besides Fire Walk With Me.
Right, but I guess its own separate entity from Twin Peaks.
Exactly.
Interesting. What a movie to start with.
They're all up there.
Definitely. This one it's really interesting. It definitely, I think this one probably requires a couple watches to start understanding.
Yeah. Well, if we want to go ahead and get into first impressions, I will say that even though it was the movie that made me a David Lynch fan, the first time I watched it, this was in college, I was high and I watched the whole thing and I was like, I did not understand a single thing about that movie. Like, it just went right over my head. I was like, I don't get it. And then I think I don't know if it was the same renting of Lost Highway or if I went back and watched it again at some point that year, but I watched it again sober and I had like this revelation that, oh my God, I totally understand exactly this movie. And, you know, I think that's kind of like what made me love David Lynch, because I was like, oh, I get it. But then I didn't watch it again until, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but I was doing the Twin Peaks Unwrapped community players thing. They did one for Lost Highway, like missing scenes from Lost Highway. Oh, so I went back and watched it so I could, you know, remember like Patricia Arquette's voice and stuff. And I again was like, I don't know if I understand it again. But this time I watched it, I was like, I have so many theories.
So that's the sort of dance is like, I don't understand it. I think I'm understanding it. No, it's gone now. Oh, wait, it's coming back.
Yeah. It depends truly on, I don't know. There are all these micro factors that must go on as to how you feel about this movie or how you understand it. But you've only watched it the one time, correct?
Yes, this was my first time sober. And I'm like still trying to solidify my feelings on it. I definitely enjoyed myself. I definitely enjoyed it. I thought it was very well made. There was a lot of great imagery. The acting was really great. And I feel like the direction was really great. It's just like, I didn't expect the sort of quote unquote story change that we got kind of in the middle of it. And so I felt like I was watching it and then it happened. And then I was like, oh, interesting. Like, are we going to get some sort of, I don't know why I thought we're going to get some sort of explanation, but we never do. But it kind of threw me off for a little bit of the second part where I just was like, not really sure how to move forward with the characters, because there were some characters that were sort of the same, but there were different characters. But overall, I still had a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. I would like to wait a bit and then watch it again to see how different I feel about it, or maybe sort of theories that'll come up.
Yeah.
That we can talk about that'll be changing in the future maybe, but
well, I'm hoping
I really enjoyed it.
Because I started off like, now that we're in our new era, I don't really need to write a full recap. So it was kind of just writing my impressions until it started to get into it a little bit more. And I was like, no, there's a mystery to be solved. I must write down all the things. So maybe as we're going through, it will help us, you know, figure some things out. Or not. For sure. I mean, it's like Twin Peaks. There's no definitive answers. And David Lynch will never give us one. But it's such a David Lynch movie, you know?
Oh, yeah. I was definitely like reading a little bit about it. I was like, this might be like, you know, technically like the most David Lynchian film.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely got Wild at Heart vibes, but it was also written by Barry Gifford and David Lynch together.
Yes. I did think, just based on my knowledge of David Lynch, it definitely felt like this was almost like a mashup, Wild at Heart and Blue Velvet in a way.
And Twin Peaks.
Oh, yeah, I could see that too.
Because it had all of the, like, people from another place, you know, like Black Lodge denizen type situation going on.
yeah, that was one thing too, but there seemed to be a supernatural element, as there seems to be a lot of times in David Lynch's stuff, and you can totally like interpret that as like other energies at work, other players, whatever. But it definitely felt like a almost like they kind of mashed up these like premises together, and we kind of got some sort of a, what do you call it, like a mutant film.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and I was thinking about it because so many of David Lynch films that we've done so far have felt like they're two parts, you know, like the beginning is different than the end. And even if it's not as dramatic as like a complete shift like this one, but yeah, it definitely had Blue Velvet vibes as well. It was just very different. And I'm very excited to talk about it some more. I mean, like, you know, really get into the meat and potatoes of it.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I watched it on the Criterion Collection release that just came out. And it was very nice. I meant to watch some of the supplemental material over the past couple days, but I totally forgot. But I think we'll have plenty to talk about. Maybe I'll try to watch some before the next episode.
Oh yeah, we'll have plenty. I mean, I feel like the way it breaks up, it's almost like two movies in one, and they kind of flow together, so...
Yeah, and this almost feels like we're going to need a third episode just after we're done recapping it, but we'll see.
A nice little, like, breakdown collection of thoughts / theories.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get into notes, because...
Let's do it. All right. So this one was interesting. According to IMDb, it was initially released in France before anywhere else. I don't know if it was at... It doesn't say it was at Cannes.
I think it must have had like a French production company.
Oh, I bet you're right.
Who gave a lot of the money for it, because I know David Lynch really likes to work with French production companies. And for a long time, you couldn't get a copy of this movie except for like a foreign version. Like, I gave you my old copy that was like a German
version. It sure was. They were a speaking Deutsch, because I was real confused when the movie started. That makes sense. And honestly, like, French cinema definitely seems very complimentary to David Lynch.
Well, and we just learned in his book that they don't put restrictions on him as a director.
Yes, which I'm sure he loves.
Yeah, they give him final cut.
Yes. Well, it premiered January 15th, 1997. Obviously directed by David Lynch. And co-written by David Lynch and Barry Gifford.
I was thinking you might want to do some of the production credits, because as the credits were rolling, I was like, Peter Deming is the cinematographer, I believe, and he's worked with him a lot. Joanna Rae, of course, did his casting for like everything, and Angelo Bandalamidi, that's not even a question. Mary Sweeney, I can't remember what she does. Maybe she's the editor or something.
I think she's producer, but she also, you know, produced Mulholland Drive and a bunch of good stuff. Deepak Nayar, who's a producer, also has done a lot of movies. Yeah, it definitely felt like, watching the credits, I recognize a lot of the names more than I usually do.
Yeah.
When I get to like the producers and all the other like crew of the film. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's interesting. How do I know all these people? But yeah. And then obviously Angelo Badalamenti did the score, which was obviously great. For our cast, we had Bill Pullman as Fred Madison.
I love Bill Pullman.
Yes, he was so good in this. And I think I've only really seen him as like older Bill Pullman. I've never seen him when he was younger. So I was like, oh, it looks so much like him, but also so much not like him. We had Patricia Arquette as both Renee Madison and Alice Wakefield, and she was amazing. I always love her. John Roselius as Al. Louis Ippolito as Ed. Michael Massey as Andy. Robert Blake as the Mystery Man. Henry Rollins as Guard Henry. Michael Seamus Wiles as Guard Mike. Mink Stull as the Forewoman, which I thought was really cool. The voice of the Forewoman.
I saw that in the cast list, but then I can't think of who the Forewoman is at the moment.
I think Hurley, her voice is credited. It was probably like in the jail, like over the loudspeaker on a radio.
Yeah.
Let's see. We had Ivory Ocean as Guard Ivory, Jack Keller as Guard Johnny Mack, Baltazar Getty as Pete Dayton.
Right. Is he a musician?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
And he's part of the, you know, legendary
David Lynch loves musician.
Oh, yeah. And he's part of the legendary Getty family, I think, of Getty Images.
Oh, really?
Yes. F. William Parker as Captain Luneau. Let's see. Gary Busey as Bill Dayton.
Yes. It's like, is that Gary really Busey? Interesting. Does he only have two lines in this entire movie?
Oh, yeah. It was very interesting. Lucy Butler as Candace Dayton. Giovanni Ribisi was in this also, which I thought was like, I kept looking out for him. I think he had a small part. He was Steve or V. But I thought that was really cool. Then Richard Pryor as Arnie.
This was his last movie.
Yes. And Robert Blake's.
And Jack Nance, I believe.
Yes. He passed before it came out.
Yeah.
That's who I was looking for. I was like scrolling. I was like, why is he so far down? Jack Nance as Phil. And then Robert Loggia as Mr. Eddie / Dick Laurent.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of like our main cast members.
Yeah.
And then for any sort of interesting trivia, the house that they are shooting at in the beginning is David Lynch's actual house.
Oh, really?
Yes. I think it's one that he also like designed and, you know, was very integral. And so I was like, this is probably one of the most David Lynch films because so much of himself is in this movie.
It's so funny because at one point they're talking to the police about there's two bedrooms in the house. And I was like, this house is way bigger than y'all are making it out to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of those like mid-century houses, it's like they look so massive and then they'll have like two or three bedrooms. And you're like, where's the other space? In the beginning where Fred hears on the intercom Dick Laurent is dead, mm-hmm. was inspired by an actual event in David Lynch's life. Where he had the same thing happen to him and he looked out the window and no one was there. It was very weird.
Spooky.
Oh, this is interesting. Robert Loggia, I think that's how you say his name, right?
I think so. Loggia.
Sounds right. He was the first and only choice to play the character of Mr. Eddie because he had previously wanted to play Frank Booth in Blue Velvet.
Ah.
And had went to auditions, but apparently he was never told that it was already cast. And he was there for like 3 hours. And apparently when David came out to tell him that it was already cast, he like went on this like huge like tirade, like screaming and ranting.
He's like, I got the part for you.
Yeah. And then David Lynch, you know, 8 years later was like, this is your role and you're going to inspire the road rage scene. this rant. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Comes up a lot that apparently David Lynch only realized after the movie came out that he was sort of subconsciously inspired by the OJ Simpson trial.
Yeah, I think he wrote that in Catching the Big Fish.
Yeah, I remember reading about that, which makes sense.
Yeah, and I think from what I understand, he was talking to Barry Gifford, like, or something Barry Gifford said, or it was like Lost Highway, and he was like, ooh, that's, I want to make a movie about the Lost Highway. And that's basically all they had to go on to begin with.
Yeah, it was in the Wild at Heart book. he saw on the same page the words Lost and Highway, and he was like, inspiration. In the scene where Fred is playing the saxophone, Bill Pullman actually learned how to play the saxophone for that role, which is interesting.
So is it him playing that music? Or is he just learned to play it so that he could look like he was playing?
It says that he learned really only, like, he didn't learn, like, all, like, the, like, how to create music with it. He just learned how to play and only to play that solo.
Oh, okay.
So he is playing it, which is really cool. A lot of the trivia for this movie is, like, just different actors being like, I didn't have any gripes with the script because I didn't understand it. Oh, this one was really interesting. Lou Ippolito, who plays Ed, apparently he was a former NYPD detective, and he eventually became infamous for being one of the quote-unquote mafia cops and was convicted in 2006 for several murders he committed for the notorious Lucchese crime family, which was so interesting. It's like a lot of scandal with him and Robert Blake, and interesting. That's it.
Well, I guess he was the right person for the role.
Yeah, it was perfect. Sometimes, you know, life just works its way out.
Yeah, David Lynch was like, I've got a feeling you'll be able to play this part. All right, well, should we go ahead and get started?
Let's do it. Okay.
Okay, well, we start off with some imagery that, even though this one is specifically very Lost Highway of driving fast down the road, I feel like we get that sort of imagery in so many David Lynch movies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I felt very comfortable. I felt like Wild at Heart to me.
Yeah.
Very deserty highway.
Yeah, and I like that there's a David Bowie song in the credits, especially since I guess he had probably just worked with him on Fire Walk With Me.
Yes. It was very, I liked that song. I didn't know it was David Bowie at first because I'm not super into David Bowie as far as like knowing his music.
Uh-huh.
But I love that song. I was like, I might have to listen to this.
I don't know if it's one of like a song that he had previously written or if it was written just for the movie. I do have the soundtrack on record, but
it's a good soundtrack.
I should get it out.
A lot of good songs.
Yeah. Okay. So after we get past the opening credits, we see Bill Pullman smoking, looking very moody. And we get a little buzz from the intercom and hear Dick Laurent is dead. Now, in the opening scene, where there's a lot of not talking in this movie. So that kind of helps bring down the notes a little bit. Bill Pullman, from the beginning, does not look great. And at the very opening, while he's smoking, there are some potentially significant sound effects going on, like kind of sounds like a metal door opening, like, you know, in a jail cell. And yeah, it kind of sounds like there's a police siren in the background, but they're not like real obvious. They're kind of like part of the soundscape. So my theory is we're starting from the very first second. Patricia Arquette is like, I remember when I was trying, because I did Renee in there in the Twin Peaks Unwrapped scenes. And so I remember watching her as Renee and going, she has zero expression. How am I supposed to do a voice acting of someone with no expression in their voice?
It reminded me a lot of Yorgos Lanthimos movies, who did the Favorite and what's the one that's right now?
Poor Things.
That's Poor Things. A lot of his dialogue is always, it seems very like deadpan. There's not a lot of emotion, but it's like, if you have a good director like him or David Lynch, it works somehow. I've never figured out how it works, but I'm like, oh, I don't care. I'm just interested somehow.
It almost, the whole opening, like the whole first part with Renee and Fred, feels very much like an abusive relationship. She seems like she is cowering. He always seems like he's looming over her. Like, in the first scene between the two of them, he says something that's not a joke, but she kind of laughs uncomfortably. And he's like, it's nice that I can still make you laugh, as he's like looming over her. And so you really feel like, this is not a good relationship, you know.
No.
Yeah.
He's very creepy, and he does a really good job of giving off like a really bad vibe.
Yeah.
From the get-go. Like, you feel like something's not right with him.
Yeah. He goes to play some wild sax at the club.
And I was like, this is like a mixture of like a rave / saxophone jazz club.
Yeah, it was very, I guess, modern jazz type saxophone.
It's very good. Yeah, very interesting.
But while he's doing that, the camera is moving through the house. He calls home, and the camera moves through the house, which is very like Bob Twin Peaks feeling, you know, like where the camera's just kind of moving supernaturally through, and it goes from one identical black phone to another. I'm like, how do you have so many identical black phones in your house? And he seems kind of angry that no one picks up. So yeah, so he's giving off very untrusting, jealous vibes. He goes home, finds her asleep. They have black satin sheets. I'm like, that is very man kind of sheets.
Well, then, like, so 90s to have, like, black or red and, like, the shiny, I don't know, just, like, these are barely sheets because I barely care.
Yeah, right. I never have to wash them because they're black.
Exactly.
Okay, so she finds the next morning, or, you know, the next time we see her in the morning, I guess it is the next morning, she finds an envelope outside with a videotape inside it. And he kind of feels like he's very much sneaking up on her when she finds this.
Yes.
And they've also got some red curtains in their house, which, if this is David Lynch's house, of course he has red curtains.
Of course. It was like, of course.
We get our first sex scene, which is not exactly passionate lovemaking. She doesn't even touch him at all until he kind of, I guess, can't perform. And then she puts her hand on his back to comfort him.
Yeah.
And she just seems so checked out.
Oh, yeah. It's very much like she's like, well, time for me to go somewhere else. Yeah. And until he's done.
Yeah.
It was very uncomfortable.
Okay. And then he tells her about a dream. And I guess we kind of see the dream as he's telling it, but he had a dream about her calling to him. And then there was fire imagery and smoke and red curtains. And he says that, and then she's in the bed. I don't know if this is part of the dream or if this is something that kind of really happens, but he looks at her and she, getting this confused in the other part. Oh no. Okay, in the dream, he looked. Sorry, let me go back.
It's okay.
Okay, so she was in bed, although it wasn't her, but it looked like her. So like, you know, very Alice, Renee, doppelganger. And then we kind of see, but I don't think he explains that it looks like he attacked her in the dream. Like, I think this is the first time we get an image of the murder, and then real life, he looks at her and she's sitting there looking at him, but she has the mysterious man's face.
Yes. Like, which was very creepy.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't do a very good job explaining that, but you know.
No, you're fine.
So the next morning, she goes out again. She's wearing a black satin robe. There's a dog barking. What? Sorry.
I was gonna say the robe and the same like platform stilettos. It always made me laugh because it was just so ridiculous.
I just wake up in the morning and put on my heels
to get the mail.
There's a dog barking in the distance, which feels like very David Lynch imagery.
Mm-hmm.
She finds another envelope with another tape, and she just kind of leaves it on the counter. Like, she doesn't even open it. Like, she got shit for it last time, so she's just gonna leave it.
She's like, you know what, you can do it.
So they watch it. She sits as far away from him as possible. These are all like, I'm not sure, it was somewhere around this point too that I looked up the IMDb, and I, at least according to mine, I don't know if it was different on yours, she was only listed as Alice and not Renee, and I was like, is this a clue?
Oh, No, mine, she was listed as both.
Okay. Well, I guess it wasn't a clue. Okay. So did we even say what was on the first tape? It was just like their house from the outside. And they thought it was like a real estate agent or something.
Yes. It was just a quick little shot.
Yeah. So this tape shows the same thing, but then it shows walking through the hallway of their house. And then it goes to them both asleep in bed.
So and creepy.
That freaks her out.
As it should.
Yeah. So she calls the police. A pair of seemingly somewhat competent but bumbling-ish detectives arrive.
Not very serious.
Very David Lynch. They ask how many bedrooms, and he says one, and then she kind of gives him a look, and he's like, well, I've got my practice room. It's soundproof. And I was like, soundproof?
I know. I was like, remember that.
I don't think it's actually important, but
no.
They ask if he owns a video camera, and this is important. She says that he hates video cameras, and he says that it's because he likes to remember things his own way, which I think is kind of the premise of the entire movie.
Yeah, when it's also like David Lynch's one of his like core thoughts.
Yeah. Plus, I think it has to do with the whole idea of O.J. Simpson, like, how could a person do this sort of thing? Well, they must not remember it the way it actually happened, type of a thing.
Yeah.
Find out that they do have an alarm that they turned off due to false alarms.
Actual false alarms?
Or... Yeah. Were they false alarms? The police suggest turning it back on. It's so funny because this is like so clearly a specific point in time, like 1997, because we're still using landlines and regular security systems.
Camcorders.
Yeah. Tapes.
Right.
So the police go around, they check all the doors, they walk on the roof, and there's a lot of stomping, and I keep thinking, oh, this is important. No, it's not. But they say they'll keep watch over the house, and this is the start of basically a police presence on every scene from here on out. Basically, they're following somebody around. Okay, and then we go to a pool party.
One of those crazy Hollywood parties.
People are naked and drinking. Andy is the name of the person who is hosting the party, and he's clearly friends with Renee. This is where I looked her up and I was like, oh, it's only listed as Alice. But no. She is pretty tipsy. Bill Pullman, or Fred, goes to get her a drink. He does not tip the bartender.
Well, he is a bad guy. Yeah.
The creepy man who is Alice's face for a second, the mysterious man, as I think I call him throughout the rest of this, shows up. And when he does, all the party sounds disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred, sorry.
I was going to say his look is so jarring because he's definitely got some like powder on.
Yeah.
Because he's very like white looking, but his lips are colored in very dark.
And he's got like the black around his eyes a little bit.
Yes. Yes, very, almost like very Carnival of Souls.
Yeah. Oh my God, I got so many Carnival of Souls because, you know, well, maybe we should save it, but maybe I'll return Carnival of Souls because, you know, that movie also has like that big twist and the whole movie is like a dead woman. And I was like, is this the same? I don't know. Okay, so yeah. Okay, so the mysterious man is talking to him. Fred is sort of nonplussed, surprisingly, for the weirdness of it. He doesn't seem to have a huge reaction to it. The man says that he is at his house, and he has him call his house, and he picks up on the line is the house, but not him, but like his doppelganger. There's a lot of doppelgangers. I didn't even think about the fact that he also was always in two places at once.
Yes. Well, he's kind of like this like supernatural being that is kind of like, is he real? Is he not real?
Yeah.
He's kind of both.
He never actually says who he is, but he says that he was invited into his house by Fred. And then he walks away and the sound comes back. And Andy says that he is a friend of Dick Laurent. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I might have missed a little bit of the transition to that. But Bill Pullman, I mean, Fred, says Dick Laurent is dead. And Andy is like, how do you know he's dead? He can't be dead. Who told you he was dead? But first it sounds like, yeah, he is dead. But how do you know he is dead? But then wait a minute, yeah. He can't be dead. So, and then Fred is like, we should have never come here in the first place. So I think that is where we, I don't know if we have like a flashback mm-hmm. or if they explain it. You know, I only watched it 2 days ago, but I can't remember every detail.
It's a long movie.
We find out that Renee and Andy met at Monk's. Oh, she's mm-hmm. telling how he met Andy.
Yes.
He told her about a job. We'll hear this again. But that's all we get at this point. Yes. So anyway, they come home. There's a light in the house. It's not like a light on, but it's kind of like a light moving mm-hmm. in the house. Fred says to stay in the car, that he's going to go check it out. Renee finally has some personality now that she's drunk. So he's walking through the house. It's very creepy vibes. He keeps staring into the dark corners. And at one point she goes in, you know, he comes and gets her. They go back in. But he's still kind of like wandering around, staring into dark corners. And there's one right outside of his bedroom. And he walks through it like he's going into mm-hmm. the darkness. And when he does get there, he finds a mirror with himself looking back at him. And she calls out for him, like he said she did in his dream. Mm-hmm. But she does not go into the dark looking for him.
I wouldn't either.
And then we see walking through, I guess, the living room, a dark shadow on the wall. And we see that it's Fred walking around. And then we have a blackout. Oof, so and creepy. Then it's the next morning. And Fred walks through the living room or into the living room with a tape. He's got the next one. I was kind of confused because I felt like it was the same night. And I was like, wait a minute, is this the next morning? So he's changed his clothes. So it's definitely, you know, there's light coming in the window.
Yeah.
But he puts in the tape and we start to hear more of those metal sounds in the background. And this time the tape is showing the living room from above, like something is flying through. And yeah. It moves into the bedroom where we see Renee dead on the floor. Fred is sitting over her, covered in blood. Her leg is on the bed.
Ugh, gross.
And then we transition to the next scene, which is him being punched by the detectives from before. And he seems kind of confused and is like, he asks if he killed Renee. Mm-hmm. And then we hear that he's found guilty. He's being led downstairs in handcuffs. He was sentenced to the electric chair. I had to look it up and be like, did California have the electric chair? And it did. He gets locked in a cell alone. I wrote down his number as 47516 because I was like, will this be relevant? But I don't think it is. We get a lot of numbers, but they're not that. So.
Mm.
Are you crying? Oh, no, that's a bird. Okay. Okay, so we see him remembering the crime, but it seems like he's only remembering the videotape version of the crime from what yes. we can see. Okay, then he goes out alone to the concrete prison yard. And he kind of grasps his head and collapses a little. Mm-hmm. He goes to the doctor and the doctor checks him out. He says he can't sleep and they give him a pill like he's a dog.
Yeah, I was like, let him take it.
Later that night, he's in his cell and he screams for the guards and says that he needs some aspirin for his head. And the guards just basically laugh at him because mm-hmm. they don't have a very good sense of humor.
No.
Okay. And then we hear singing and a scene opens on his prison door, like curtains.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a house on stilts, which I thought was at the beach, but is actually in the desert. And it's kind of burning in reverse. So it's like mm-hmm. sucks back into itself. And the mysterious man is there. And then the lights go out.
Hmm. Very interesting. I feel like that's such a David Lynch thing, is like the in reverse.
Yes.
Of that house.
Especially fire. Apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll definitely see this house again. But okay. Oh, yeah. So then it kind of is also like, this turns into like a little montage where we see car driving. We see Peter, who I could have sworn in the first scene he was being called Dean, but I couldn't figure out why I thought that. He's kind of standing on the side of the road. Fred is like shaking his head and kind of like, it almost looks like he's metamorphosizing. He's freaking out in his cell. There's a blurry person and then another blackout. And then we see a guard going through and checking inside all the cells, I presume maybe the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that there's a problem. Fred Madison is no longer in his jail. Now Peter, who we just saw standing on the side of the road, is in there. And I think the warden says, this is some spooky shit we got here.
Definitely made me laugh.
Yeah. They look him up. I guess he's been arrested before. His parents come to pick him up. They're both wearing sunglasses. Gary Busey is one of them.
I was like, what are these biker parents?
I know. Especially because they don't seem like that ever again. But no. They take him home. And new detectives are now watching him. So we get an extremely Blue Velvet moment in which Peter is on a lawn chair in the yard. There's a white picket fence behind him. He looks over the fence and there's a dog and a kiddie pool next door. And he's got this like big bruised bash. Mm-hmm. It looks like he got hit in the head with something. And yes. There's lounge music playing. So then his 90s friends come over. They're so 90s.
So 90s. I think one of these guys was Giovanni Ribisi.
Oh, that makes sense. I didn't really pay much attention to the other friends. He doesn't even mention what happened to him.
Yeah, that he woke up in the jail cell.
Yeah. So far his parents haven't even spoken, and his girlfriend was there when he somehow got sucked out of the world. So they all go to a club in a bowling alley, I think. It seems like they walk through a bowling alley, but then they're all dancing like they're at a club. So not sure about that.
Maybe it's like a fire walk with me, like downstairs, like, yeah, you know,
probably
club kind of deal.
I guess they ask him why he's acting so strange. I think his girlfriend does, and he doesn't seem to remember, or he doesn't say that he remembers.
Yeah.
So he goes back to work. He works at Arnie's, Richard Pryor. It's a mechanic shop. Arnie is extremely happy to see him, so I don't know, maybe he was gone for a little while. And Mr. Eddie is also happy to see him. Which was kind of confusing because this is also Dick Laurent, another doppelganger, double named person. Yes. Which I guess probably all has to do with the nature of memory and how we remember things. And so anyway, Mr. Eddie comes in and he says he wants to take him for a ride so he can listen to whatever's wrong with his car. And right off from the bat, he seems bad.
Oh, yeah. He's very much like a Frank Booth where you're like, oh, he's the villain.
Yeah. The police are still watching, but they don't notice, I guess, who it is at this point. But we hear that Pete is the best mechanic in town. They drive down some twisty road, which I'm sure is some famous California road. And
Mulholland Drive.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll get to Mulholland Drive
later.
Very
interesting. Very interesting.
Some asshole comes up behind them driving erratically and honking and tailgating him. And Mr. Eddie like waves him past, trying to get him to pass. But the driver idiotically slows down and flips the bird at him. And so Mr. Eddie freaks out, drives the man off the road. Pulls him out of the car. They pull guns on him. He screams in his face about terrible driving. He beats the shit out of him. Pete seems a little bit freaked out. And they don't kill him, but they leave the man crying on the side of the road.
Yeah. I was like, I wonder if, you know, David Lynch or Barry Gifford is this like some sort of like we're pulling our road rage? I was on the way to meet you to write this and some asshole was honking at me.
Well, my experience of driving in California is it is rage inducing, and I'm sure everyone there has road rage. And I would always let every single person pass me whenever I was on a road like that, because I was like, I am not fighting you guys to be in the front. I don't care.
Yeah.
So anyway, where was I?
No, they leave the guy on the side of the road.
Yes. Mr. Eddie's car, not a scratch on it. It seems surprisingly fine for just having pushed another car off the road. Okay, so he gives Pete some cash. He tries to give him a porno, probably the porno. But he doesn't take it. This is when the cops recognize him as Laurent. And this is where I said was the halfway point.
We get the reveal, which is like the most like cop reveal. Hey, you know who that guy is? It's like, okay.
I kind of feel like I should have kept going a little bit further, just because I'm pretty sure I have like twice as much to say in the second half as I did in the first. But that's okay.
we won't have notes or first impressions.
That's true. But we actually have time. Do you want to sort someone?
Sure.
We should do someone who's pretty much only in the first half, like Renee or maybe Fred. Although Fred comes back, so.
Yeah, let's do Renee.
Okay. I feel like we should do Renee and Fred and then come back next time and do Pete and Alice.
Yes, that's actually a good idea.
Okay, let's start with Renee, though. It's so hard because she has so little personality.
I know. I almost want to be like, maybe she's like an air sign.
I was thinking like a water sign, like maybe a Pisces.
That's not.
She could be an air sign, but it just seems like someone who's got a lot of emotions, but it's just like suppressing them all, you know? And Pisces can kind of adapt themselves to whoever they're with.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Let's do that. I think Pisces really fits for her based on those descriptions.
From what we know of her so far, which is barely anything.
Just little to nothing.
Seems very quiet and pretty emotionless.
Yes. I like that. And then for Fred, I mean, is he a fire sign?
I feel like he's maybe like a Scorpio. I was going to say Aries at first, which could also be, they're both Mars ruled signs. But Scorpio is, like, is water, I guess.
Could he be maybe like a Leo?
I was going to say maybe he's a mutable sign because they're usually murderers. If you see a list of murderer signs, it's always mutable signs.
That's so interesting.
But if he was fire mutable, that would make him a Sagittarius.
Oh, no.
But I want to say Scorpio just because I think Scorpios, they can get very jealous. And they just, you know, they're very overwhelmingly in love, I guess, kind of like possessively in love.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. That kind of, you know, works with the theories I have in my mind.
Yeah. And they like dark things, which I'm not going to say that makes them a murderer, but.
But it doesn't, you know, not help.
Yeah. I don't know. He plays saxophone like an Aries or Sagittarius, I would say.
I say let's go with Aries then. Let's go with your gut. Because I'm sure maybe he's got some Scorpio in his chart that is really influencing it. But
well, you know, with all the doppelgangers, he could definitely have two things. Exactly. He's definitely Mars. He's got a lot of Mars.
Yes.
We'll say.
I like that.
Okay, so how else do we sort them? I know we do this, the Jane Austen, but I was like, is there something before that?
The D&D.
Oh, yeah. Okay, chaotic evil.
Yeah, Fred is definitely chaotic evil.
And neutral.
Yeah, because she's you know, she's working in the gray zone.
Yeah. That was the easiest one yet.
I guess for Jane Austen, this is an interesting one.
Yeah. What would they like? I could see Renee definitely like doing a lot of reading and reading Jane Austen. I don't know if she would like it. I just don't know what she would like.
Maybe she would see it as an escape from her current situation.
Totally. I would say, I'm guessing persuasion, because she seems like she needs more of the sad girl books.
Yeah. As opposed to
comedies.
Yeah, definitely. She could probably be like, I'm equally as not happy
or in Mansfield my Park, maybe.
Or Mansfield Park. I love the persuasion thing, because then she can like fantasize about someone wanting to be with her and, you know, not trying to like control her.
Someone she missed out on long ago.
Exactly. I like that.
But then also Mansfield Park, because Fanny is like trapped in this household that she really has no control over.
I want to escape.
Yeah. I think those would be her favorites.
Fred seems like
he'd be drawn to all the Willoughbys. John Thorpes. Well, maybe not John Thorpe. All of the villains.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, maybe he likes Sense and Sensibility because it's so over the top evil.
Oh, for sure.
With the villains.
Or maybe, who's an Emma?
Frank
Churchill. Who we're always like, yeah. he's like, I feel a kinship with him.
I could see young Bill Pullman playing Frank Churchill for sure.
Exactly. One, a confirmed murderer. The other one, a suspected murderer.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, that's good. I was just looking up, I don't remember what I was looking up, but I found out that there was a student film, I think, version of Persuasion that was made last year, I think, that's or the year before. I assume it was a student film because everyone looks like students and it's only an hour long.
Oh, that, a treatment.
But it's like a modern adaptation, so...
Oh,
we may have to try to do that at some point. And then I was noticing that there are several musicals. I already knew about an Emma musical, which we'll probably do someday, but there's now a Sense and Sensibility musical as well. So we might have to do that as well at some point.
Sure. That sounds kind of fun. I'd be interested to see
a digital copy of it.
Yeah. I would be interested to see, you know, what songs they're singing.
Yeah. I've seen one dramatic not dramatic, but like a play of Pride and Prejudice, and I was not in love with it. I don't know if it was the production or the script, but I was like, this is not a very great retelling of Pride and Prejudice.
Well, I think with a lot of like, what would you call them? Like classics, when they kind of try and convert them into like stage plays, I feel like the like gut reaction is to just basically replicate it completely. And I feel like that makes it a little boring. You need to have a little bit of flair, because people in their imaginations are adding the flair when they're reading the book.
I think there's several different adaptations of Pride and Prejudice, but if I remember correctly, this one was very much like, we're kind of floating from vignette to vignette. This probably isn't very relevant to Lost Highway, but... but okay, so anyway, you better come back and listen to the second half next week.
Yeah, I mean, this is... the part where we ended is where I was, like, getting lost, because I was like, what's happening? And then it started picking up really fast, and I was like, oh my god, there's so much going on.
All the theorizing will be next week, I'm sure. Or even the week after, depending.
Yeah, and some clarifications, because who knows, maybe something one of us will say about a scene sort of changes the mind of the other.
That's true. Definitely a possibility. Okay, well, I guess that's all for today then.
Yes. If you have any theories about the first half of this movie, you can email us at mannersandmadness@gmail.com. On Twitter, we're at mannersmadness. And on Instagram and Threads, we are at mannersandmadnesspod. And then if you'd like to leave a voicemail, 1 minute long, on our website, you can go to mannersandmadness.com, and we also have a donate button if you feel so inclined.
Yes. And we'd love 5-star ratings and reviews if you would like to do that.
Yes, please. And you can do a rating without a review. You just got to click those 5 stars.
Yes, yeah, we're happy for every 5 stars to make up for those yes. 2 1-stars that really ruined our average.
Yes, only 5 stars, please. Otherwise, I don't care.
Otherwise, yeah, it's not worth the effort otherwise.
Exactly.
Anyway, until we meet again.
Yes, we'll see you guys next week. Okay, bye.